I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
How's it, everybody? Welcome back for another episode. You're here with me, Nick. As always, I'm joined by my good buddy, Ronnie. Ronnie, how's it going over that side in Spain?
I walked in the shop the other day and I found myself some rooibos tea. So I've been drinking rooibos tea to make me feel like I'm in South Africa.
Oh, there we go. Was it Five Roses or what?
No, it's just called Rojo, red tea.
Well, glad you got a little piece of home there. If I'm sounding funny to the listeners, it's because Ronnie somehow passed on his Spanish flu to me. I've been a bit man down for the last few days. I don't know how you pulled that off, Ronnie, but well done.
I'm a ninja.
But I think there must be something wrong with me. It's 35 degrees here in Pretoria. It is cooking. And here I am sipping on a Seattle coffee. So something's definitely wrong at the moment.
No, you are addicted to Seattle coffee. Just so pretentious. I mean, coffee's coffee, right?
No. Coffee is not coffee. We know Seattle is the elite one to drink. I see you're drinking something out of a mug there. Is it also coffee?
No, it's rooibos tea, you idiot. We literally just spoke about it.
Oh, yeah, that's my bad. Is it cold that side?
It's cold and then it's hot and then it's windy and then it's raining and then it's just everything all at once.
So something familiar about this Monday, hey, Ronnie. It's a familiar feeling we normally have when England lose, but I must say I was quite chuffed this Monday walking into the office knowing the Irish had lost to the English. The best
team so great.
Or the world's best team, depending who you ask.
I mean, I really want to talk about that world's best team at some point. I don't know if you're going to fit that into the agenda at some stage, but we really do need to unpack that.
You know what? Let's fit it into the agenda right here, Ronnie, and let's unpack this. Guys coming out, former Irish players, not one English player could make their way into this team. Jamie Heaslip, the only way the Irish are going to lose is if they go down to 14 or 13 men. Yeah, someone forgot to tell that to England.
Yeah, no, look. Well, they did go down to 14 men. I mean, Mahoney went off with a card at some point. But yeah, regardless of that, I listen to a bunch of other podcasts as well. I don't actually listen to this podcast, but I do listen to other ones. So sorry about that. But I heard Robbie Fleck make an excellent point. I mean, how can you claim to be the world's best if you're playing those teams up north there? So I don't know how you can claim to be the world's best.
It's true. So let's take away the result from the weekend and let's actually just look at this statement, because Ireland got knocked out for the 8th quarterfinal in a row, if nobody heard, by the All Blacks in France last October. And they've never progressed past the quarterfinal, just FYI, if anyone didn't know that. And now we sit with a team that says, you know, they are the best in the world. They should have won the World Cup. All this outcry.
Should have, could have, would have.
But is winning the Six Nations really mean you're the best team? Is it not the fact that you play all the different countries at a World Cup? The World Cup makes you the world's best.
But that's exactly it. So you can claim, I think there's only ever been one team that can claim to have been the world's best without a World Cup performance in that picture. And that's New Zealand, right? So they were dominant for like 2 decades. Dominant, and they were beating everyone. I think the best win ratio against them was the South Africans, and South Africans have only won 40-odd% of the test matches. So I think New Zealand's the only one that can claim to have ever been the world's best without, say, the World Cup impacting on that at all. You can't claim to be the world's best between World Cup cycles because teams are experimenting. Teams are, you know, they've got a rusty, you know, trying new players, new combinations, working on team chemistry. So can you really claim to be the best outside of a World Cup, where every single team that goes to the World Cup, except for Australia, except for Eddie Jones's Australia, go there with a team in place to compete for the World Cup. That's the only place where all teams like put all their energy into being the best that they can be.
But that's exactly a good point you make there, Ronnie, because the World Cup is the one event where all teams aim to peak at the same time. The rest of the years between that, we've got Ireland coming here now at the back end of their season. They've just played the Six Nations. We're only starting our season. When we play them in November, it's going to be the back end of our season. They're only going to be starting their season. But the World Cup is the competition everyone is aligned for. Everyone's planned to peak at that moment. So surely that's an indication of which side is the best.
But that is exactly the point. So we're just gonna trade the same point back and forth between ourselves. But we agree on that. It's the only time where all teams work towards, except of course Eddie Jones's Australia. Everybody works to be at their best during the World Cup, and that's where the true competition lies. So yeah, you can claim to be the world's best, but are you really? It's like an unofficial, well done, here's a naughty badge for you. But see if you can try peak during the World Cup.
Yeah, and obviously, I've taken the stance on Punted Socials that I'm going to troll the hell out of Ireland in the lead up to this series, just because I feel like it's deserved after claiming to be the world's best. But please, guys, make no mistake, mad respect for Ireland. They are a very, very good rugby team.
Absolutely.
I thoroughly enjoy watching them play. I've supported them throughout the Six Nations, but don't come to South Africa and think we're just going to give it to you.
No, agreed. So you're a very good team, of course. You know, their performance over the last 30 games have been exceptional. I mean, they've only lost a handful, and they are playing like New Zealand did 10 years ago. And, you know, props to them. They really are an incredibly difficult team to beat, home or away. But until you win a World Cup, my friend, it's just, you know, it's nothing. It's empty.
Yeah. Ronnie, I'm not going to let us escape these other two topics that I had scheduled for this point on the podcast. And the first is, I have to ask, you messaged me last night, you were using Google Translate on Uber Eats to order some food, and something, what was it, meatballs that were bloody chicken. Did you end up ordering that?
No, I did not order the bloody chicken. Yeah, you know, so there's this app here, this delivery app called Glovo, and they've got a built-in translation because my Spanish is shocking. And there were these chicken croquettes. You know, and when he translated it, it turned out to be bloody chicken. So, of course, I asked you what you think, because it looked bloody good, but bloody chicken just doesn't sound very appetizing. But yeah, I'm not going to order. I'm not going to try. It's too expensive to play games, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like an experiment to go for something called bloody chicken. And then, Ronnie, you also yesterday asked me something else, did you not?
Yeah. No, look, I stand by it. And you're very cocky about the fact that you feel like you know how to mop a floor. You don't know how to mop a floor. You think you know how to mop a floor, but mopping a floor, there's an art to it. So we're very blessed back home in South Africa, and very privileged. Yeah, that we're learning how to mop floors later on in life.
So, well, we have, for everyone now, you've guessed that Ronnie asked me how to mop a floor because he wasn't quite sure. So Ronnie, is your floor mopped?
Again, yeah, my floor is mopped and it's clean and it smells amazing. But you sit there laughing, and I just wish I could slap the smug look off your face, because mopping isn't as, you know, somebody spills a beer, you bring up the mop with some water and you just mop up that little square meter. Mopping a floor is hectic. You've got to get your ratios correct with the detergent and make sure it's not too much, not too little. You've got to wring out the mop. You've got to mop across the floor. You've got to make sure you're not just moving the dirt across. So after sweeping all the entire floor yourself, you know, then you got to come with the mop, not too much water, not too little water. You've got to go over it two or three times to really get that grime off of the floor. And, you know, it's important to do it properly. Not like you bloody South Africans there that, you know, someone spills a beer, bring out a quick mop and do.
Yeah, listen to you going at it there. The last question I have then, Ronnie, is how slippery is your floor? How much soap did you leave behind, and have you slipped today?
No, I don't slip. No, I don't slip. But it's hard. It's just hard flooring. And in South Africa, we're lucky with the tile. The tile, I think, is very easy to clean. And this hardwood flooring, it's a pain in the ass. But I haven't slipped yet.
Well, Ronnie, speaking of pain in the ass, let's go over to Super Brew, where I am not doing so well in the Six Nations. I'm ranked in
as usual
180th.
Week in, week out, we have this conversation. You know, I'm 438th, so not doing too well after last week. But, you know, I'm thrashing you, which is no surprise, really.
Yeah, I'll give it to you. This one, you really are beating me. But at least I'm beating you in the URC, so that's okay.
You're not.
We'll get onto that in another episode. So, Ronnie, we take a look at the first Six Nations game from the weekend. We had Italy playing Scotland in Italy at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome. 82,000 people turning up for that game, sold out stadium, and Italy won 31-29 for a first home victory in 11 years, Ronnie. How incredible was that from the Italians?
Yeah, very surprising. I didn't watch the game because I thought, you know, Scotland were going to run away with it. And I was pleasantly surprised when I tuned into the England-Ireland match only to see the log tell me that the log that they brought up on the screen told me that Italy had actually pulled it off. And amazing, really.
Yeah, it really, really was special from the Italians. And even because they went behind quite early on, it was 14-3 after just 10 minutes. They were down. Scotland really looked to be in control of the game, you know, starting early, starting strong. The Italians were having none of it. Even at halftime, Scotland leading 22-16. Italians didn't panic, a very young side, so well done to them for holding on. And Lamaro, just a kid in the stands when they beat Ireland in 2013, Ronnie. Now he's captaining them to their first win on home soil since then. It's a special occasion, eh?
Awesome to see. So, yeah, maybe we can all eat our words a little bit. Maybe Italy deserves to be in the Six Nations. Maybe we should consider Wales getting kicked out of the Six Nations.
Yeah, well, based on current form, that might be the case. But, you know, Italy did well to capitalize on poor Scottish discipline, the Scots giving away a lot of ball and a lot of penalties. And then they also really managed to shut Finn Russell and Duan Vanhoove down quite well, not giving them space and time on the ball to make them really, really dangerous. And an interesting one for me, Ronnie, Scotland had 177 carries in this game. It's about 85 more than what Italy had. And Italy managed to shut that all down.
Tackles win matches.
Tackles win matches. And the Italian loose forwards really went to work scoring or earning 9 turnovers to 3 for Italy. So that was a big point of difference for them in that game. This goes on to something you told me, which is that Australia has now dropped below Italy in the world rankings. But Michael Leinach's son, Louis Leinach, was debuting for Italy this weekend. So World Cup winning Wallaby there to watch his son debut for Italy and get a historic win at home.
Does this make Louis Leinach the most successful Italian player of all time?
It must be.
Is it 100% one from one? Win record?
That's quite excellent, dude. Yeah, Ronnie. So, I don't know. I was quite impressed with the Italians in that game. They've got one more coming up. I don't know if they can pull off another win, but very, very well done to Italy for making quite a statement.
Yeah, closing point, perhaps if they had actually come away with the win, which we felt that they deserved against France, you know, they were in for a possible huge upset in the Six Nations order. But anyway, so next game, England, Ireland. 23-22. So we as South Africans know that whether you win by 1 point or 100 points, yeah, 23-22 to England.
Ronnie, was it a quarterfinal?
Could well have been. I mean, yeah. Anyway, so 3-2 for England to Ireland's 2. And, you know, I was pleasantly happy with that because I just didn't want Ireland to, you know, get the home, the Grand Slam, and then go on to win the Six Nations and get maximum points in every single match. You know, that would have just upset me because that's an incredible record to achieve. And I was a little bit jealous of that unfolding in front of my eyes. So I was just glad that Ireland didn't get maximum points. But yeah, well done to England for, you know, scoring two plus tries. First time since, I think, beating Chile at the World Cup. So well done.
No, that's quite impressive, Ronnie. I mean, we spoke last week about England's poor stats since the World Cup, how much Steve Borthwick must be struggling, the tough games he has coming up ahead. But to see them come and score three tries, break that hoodoo. But it's also the first team that Borthwick has beaten ranked above him since he's taken the reins.
I didn't know that. That's an impressive stat to see. But I just want to make a point, though. We potentially for next week's show should have a look at England's last, you know, all their matches under Steve Borthwick. And it doesn't look as bad as people make it out to be, as I think is a point to make. England haven't been as crap as we think they are, though. That said, England, much like South Africa, they know how to win when it really matters. So England have, you know, shown that in World Cups before, you know, they get to the semifinals, they get to the finals. They might not always win them, but they're one of those teams that knows how to win. And there's also another podcast that I was listening to that said, you know, Ireland's a good team, but they're not a great team because they can't win the matches that really matter. So yeah, maybe England is one of the great teams, you know, they suck in between, but they know when to win.
Yeah, well, England seems to be the only Northern Hemisphere team with some BMT at the moment. So Well done to the English for getting that right. And I must say, Ronnie, a player that impressed the hell out of me was Ben Earl, the English number 8. That guy was running like a man possessed on that field.
Well, not just that, defending like a man possessed. So running, tackling, rucking, you know, he was doing everything. I think the only thing he needed to work on was his man of the match speech at the end of the game. But otherwise, he did exceptionally well. Yeah, so 4-game losing streak to the Irish that the English, stopped right there. Just fantastic to see. So Ireland, second loss since 2022. So still fantastic to see from them. Mahoney, sin bin for, what was arguably a really dumb decision on his part, going off the ball and just giving England that momentum swing in their favor. So yeah, look, Furbank went on together with Earl to score their tries and put England ultimately in the lead to win the game. But Ireland did lead that game at halftime. Unfortunately for them, they can't seem to finish a game.
Yeah, also interesting for me, Ronnie, was to see that England got 8 line breaks to 2 for Ireland. I mean, that's a statistic you're not normally used to seeing, because the Irish tend to really love running that ball.
Look, the way I saw it is Felix Jones working on that rush defense on the part of England, and I saw them running up to meet Ireland behind the advantage line, which was, straight out of the Springbok textbook. But, we can't claim that anymore. It's now out of Felix Jones's textbook. So I think that's good to see. I think that there's obviously, in the early days when we saw Mapimpi come off his wing for the Springboks, we were all up in arms about, what is this ridiculous thing? And eventually, after some time, it started to work out. So I think if you give Felix some time with that English defensive line, they are going to become a very difficult team to score against. So, and that's probably what we're seeing here is, Ireland struggling to break the line that Felix Jones has created there with the English team.
So, you saw Marcus Smith come on returning from injury, that calf injury that had him out for most of the season, Ronnie. George Ford missing some kicks, 8 points left behind by him. But at the same time, how smooth was that back line running under George Ford? They were running some of the best lines I've seen England run since about 2018.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think George Ford is definitely choice 10 for England. I know Owen Farrell's a fantastic player. But does he need to be the 10 for England? I don't know so much. I think George Ford is confident in how he plays at 10.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see with Faz obviously going over to France and taking a 2-year sabbatical, who comes out as front runner now, whether it's Marcus Smith or George Ford that takes it on. Or even someone else, a youngster that makes a come up, hey, Ronnie?
Sure. So Marcus Smith ends up dropping the winning goal at the end there. Impressive, definitely drop goal, but they did have the advantage, so a little bit of an asterisk there. Felt confident enough to go for it because they would get the ball back. But still, come off with a win after a drop goal, that's definitely going to boost your confidence. And, maybe Marcus Smith does need that a bit at the moment.
Yeah. And, New Zealand's definitely going to have taken notice of England now after notching up that win, because England's going to be touring New Zealand in July. So big statement from the English and well done to them. Ronnie, over to another team that made a big statement. I thought it was going to be the weekend of upsets with Wales coming out on top. But unfortunately, they went down 45-24 to France in Wales at the Principality Stadium.
Surprising for me because, Wales were in it for quite some time there, actually. And then they just seem to go to sleep. And we've said this about a number of teams, actually. Just teams aren't able to play the full 80 minutes. So they go to sleep midway through the game. What is the halftime score? 20-17. That's any horse's race still. And then France just went off. They just took it to a whole new gear. And, how many points was that in the end?
Yeah, it was very disappointing for Wales because, like you said, they started really well. They were playing some very good rugby in the first half. And then they just faded out. And I don't know if that comes down to the youth of their squad. They're not used to maintaining this level of performance for so long. But it's definitely something Gatland's going to have to work on because it's an obvious trend in their season, I would say. The inability to close out a game after sticking in it for 60 minutes. France making a lot of changes coming into this game. They had a lot to prove as well. There's been a number of comments coming out on whether or not Galtier is at risk of losing his job. Is the France team worth anything without Dupont? Are their centers aged? What's going on? And they came out in stunning fashion with a big, big victory, Ronnie. They played really well, scoring 5 tries to 3 in this one. What did you think of Thomas Ramos playing at 10? He scored 20 points for France of those 45.
Wasn't there some guy called Intermac at some point somewhere in the French lineup? I mean, I kind of forgotten about him now with the way Ramos is playing at 10.
Yeah, so with Intermac out injured still, it's an opportunity for Ramos there. And obviously, Jalibert also suffering injury last or 2 weeks ago. So Ramos stepping up, playing bloody well. He's a player I enjoy.
Yeah.
Someone, one of my favorites from the World Cup, in fact.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And the point I was just trying to make is France seem to be a little bit blessed at 10 at the moment. So yeah, Intermac, we all thought was, quite the injury many months ago before the World Cup. But turns out, you know, they've got a couple of other players that play really well there.
Do you think this marks France's return to form, Ronnie?
Oh, it's too early to say, right? Also, does three games make bad form? I don't know so much. I think it's just, three games that haven't gone their way. It's straight off the World Cup. You could say they're trying new things. I don't want to say they're in bad form. I just want to say they've had three games or four games that haven't quite gone as swimmingly as they wanted to. Three games, the one against Wales went obviously very well. So I don't want to say they're in bad form. Not yet.
Yeah, I think the big momentum shift in that game also came with Gael Ficou's charge down. That's really where I felt the momentum shift a little bit, and France picking up the speed of the game and really starting to overwhelm this young Welsh side. That was a tongue
over Welsh.
Well, maybe that could become a new term. They got over Welsh in the last 20 minutes. But yeah, Ronnie, so now Wales go into a wooden spoon decider next weekend against Italy. You know, Italy is ahead of them on the log, but the loser of that game could potentially be the wooden spoon for this season.
Yeah, so Italy, of course, had they actually beaten France back then, they would have been sitting really pretty on the log at the moment, but, it wasn't to be. At the moment, Wales are on 3 points and Italy on 7. So a 4-point win, Wales getting 4 points is not necessarily going to mean that they won't get wooden spoon. So they're up against, they need to get a bonus point out of that win and make sure that Italy, and that the points difference puts them ahead, and that Italy is, it won't get an X, it won't get a within 7 bonus point there to deny themselves the wooden spoon. France in fourth at the moment on 11 points, technically somewhat tied with Scotland also on 11 points, but obviously the tiebreakers put Scotland in third. England on 12 points and Ireland top of the pops with 16 points. So Ireland are no longer in contention for those extra 3 bonus points for the Grand Slam, obviously having lost this past weekend. So that opens the door for, England to potentially win the Six Nations, and possibly, very far off. I don't know about points difference. No, it's points difference. I'm not looking favorably for Scotland and France, but England are in with a chance if Ireland lose this coming weekend and don't get an extra point against Scotland.
Yeah, it's definitely set it up for an interesting final weekend in the competition. Ireland thought they were going to be celebrating the Six Nations trophy last Saturday. So Ronnie, let's then take a look over to this weekend's upcoming fixtures. It's the last round of the Six Nations. A lot to play for, avoiding wooden spoons, going for the title still. So first up, we have Italy versus Wales. That's in Wales. Kickoff is at 4:15 on Saturday. Who are you fancying in the wooden spoon decider?
So firstly, that's 4:15 in South Africa's time zone, which is GMT plus 2. And I think we need to mention this going forward because we've got international listeners, including myself, who never knows what time kickoff is.
Fair enough. Apologies to all our international listeners. The game is at 16:15 GMT plus 2.
Lucky you even know what that means. I want to call Italy here. I want to see Italy finish strong. Potentially get up to 11 points, possibly 12 points, and see potentially them overtake France. Let's say France, and get up to fourth on the log. But yeah, look, Wales back home, maybe they're going to finish strong themselves. So safe bet, I think, would be a safe bet's probably Italy at this point. Italy by 2 points.
Yeah, I'm also backing Italy. I think they're the safe bet. They have a bit more momentum on their side, and like you say, they have the opportunity to play for their best ever finish in the Six Nations. 2 victories, 1 draw. Not a bad year for them, I would say, if they manage to get that right. Then, Ronnie, over to Ireland, Dublin. They'll be playing host to Scotland. Kickoff is at 18:45 GMT plus 2.
Yeah, so look, I really want to see Scotland come away with the win here, but I think Ireland are hurting after this past weekend, so it's going to be very difficult. I mean, the fact just to play Ireland in Dublin, you know, a big enough ask, but to do so after, you know, they've been wounded this past weekend. I mean, you know, they always talk about don't write off a wounded Springbok. I think, yeah, you shouldn't write off a wounded potato. So,
yeah. Well, I'm going to take the opposite approach, Ronnie, because we've just spoken about how Ireland are not good in the big moments. This is a big moment for Ireland to win the Six Nations. So I'm backing Scotland to bounce back from their loss to Italy and to beat Ireland by 1 point.
Wow. Well, it would be amazing to see, right? Look, seeing Scotland beat Ireland and then England going on to beat France in the next match there, and England come away with a Six Nations win. I mean, I love to not support England. You know, we always talk about it. England's everybody's favorite team to beat, but... you know, it would be really funny to see how the Irish react after the England come away with a win.
Yeah, well, then we won't even be welcoming the Six Nations champions to our shores if that happens. Ronnie, France versus England, you mentioned 2200 hours GMT plus two.
Yeah, so
I hope you know how much time every kickoff is.
No, we need to do this. We need to do this because every bloody weekend I'm like, I have no idea what time the kickoff is. I don't know if Supersport is giving me local time or South African time, or Super Brew is giving me local time. I just never know. But yeah, France versus England, we said late in the night. The French love to play so late in the night. I don't know what the story is there. But yeah, England beating France, I don't know so much. For me, this is a 50-50 call.
Yeah, it's going to be a very, very difficult one. I think France did pick up a bit of momentum. I think they'll want to finish strong at home as well. But then again, England also, they finally got a big win under their belt. Maybe that's the spark they needed to really get into the stride. Can I go for a draw in this one, Ronnie?
A draw is, well, maybe. I don't know. Look, let's just say wishful thinking, Scotland beats Ireland, prevents Ireland from getting a bonus point. England goes on to thrash France. And they themselves get a bonus point, a victory, and outrightly secure the Six Nations Championship.
Yep, well, certainly makes for an interesting weekend of Six Nations rugby, Ronnie. A competition we don't really cover on the podcast anymore, but one with some results that I thought deserved some coverage this weekend, and that's Super Rugby Pacific. Guys, we do have a Super Blue pool for this one as well. The pool code is COBSBATE, COBSBATE. As always, you can just search for Rugby Pundit and our pool will pop up there. Ronnie, did you watch any of the Super Rugby?
I did not, but honestly, what a weekend to have missed. You know, that this really was a weekend of upsets, in my opinion.
It really, really was. So the Aussies are no more the whipping boys of this competition because the Reds got a 25-19 win over the Chiefs, who were firm favorites to take the tournament this year. Hurricanes got a 29-21 point over the Blues. I know our mate Dan over at Short Ball Rugby is very happy about that. He's a Canes fan and reckons it's the Canes, yeah. We're hoping
unbeaten. To you, Dan. Hurricanes are unbeaten.
Yeah, that's true. And then speaking of unbeaten and now thoroughly beaten, the Fijian Drua got a 20-10 victory over the Crusaders.
Scott Robinson.
Yeah, they're missing him. This is the third defeat in a row for the Crusaders and what must be their worst start to a season since like 2002.
I don't think there's ever been a worse start to the season like this, yeah. Honestly.
2002 DC, when Dan Carter started.
Yeah, so well done to the Drua. Honestly, Fiji, you know, close to our hearts, probably our second team. We both said that before. We love the Fijians. But that's incredible to see. It's just hope that continues onwards and upwards.
Absolutely, Ronnie. And then last one for the weekend, very close, but one that did go the New Zealanders' way. Highlanders getting a 23-21 point win over the Tars in Australia.
Which, in my opinion, was also an upset. If you just saw how the, you know, the Waratahs, how the Highlanders have not actually been performing, in my opinion. But yeah, well done.
Yep, absolutely. So, Ronnie, a couple of topics in the news this week. Some interesting things we need to talk about. The first one has to be the Stormers. 7-try victory, 45-29 over Northampton Saints. Diomani playing on the wing, jersey 28. Did you see his try celebration, Ronald?
I still can't really make sense of what was going on there. It was funny to watch, but I don't understand what happened there.
Unbelievable. Hey, runs and scores one hell of a try from within his own 22, gets the ball, dots it down, and then runs into the Northampton fans' stand. And pulls his Stormers jersey off, and he's wearing a Saints jersey underneath. So he got them. He was really happy. They were really happy. So great occasion for the big man.
For sure. Nice to see them experimenting with him on the wing. Maybe a McAdoo type situation for the Springboks.
Yeah, or a Quagga.
But a Quagga plus a bit more, right? Because, you know, we know Quagga could potentially play wing, but if Diamani is actually a wing, conversion. Yeah.
Man's got pace, Ronnie. And then just before we started recording, I saw it announced the Sharks have signed Jason Jenkins from Leinster. So obviously with Adkia moving over there, they're not allowed two South African qualified players at lock, having to release Jenkins, and the Sharks have snapped him up.
Yeah, good to see. Coming home.
Yep. Ronnie, now we need to have a bit of a chat about Springbok ticket prices, because we booked now this week also for Mbombela as well as Durban. The Durban tickets sold out in 30 minutes or something ridiculous like that. I thought I wasn't going to get tickets. But the price of these tickets has been very high, hey, Ronnie.
Yeah, but it's a problem, the fact that they're so high and they still sell out, right? Because that just means they're never going to go down. You know, there's clearly demand for it. And fair enough, if you want to price it accordingly. But what you're doing is you're eliminating the everyday fan, the guy that can't afford, you know, $1,250 for your second cheapest tickets for Loftus. It's ludicrous.
Yeah, it's very, very expensive for the tickets. And like you say, it's ruling out the common fan. But I still think that your national team should be broadcast on SABC. I think the whole country should be able to watch their national side play sport, especially if tickets are reaching these prices, which makes the team really inaccessible to a lot of people. But it's now also come out that apparently SA Rugby has put these reservation fees on hosting the Springboks tests, intending to cover back 85 million. So basically, that's a guarantee that SA Rugby has with each stadium hosting a test on how much money they have to pay over to SA Rugby, in the region of about 10 million rand for each union, a little bit less for Bloem, who's hosting the Portugal game. The union's not wanting to pay it, Ronnie. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit difficult to say, because I did read that article and, you know, I don't have any frame of reference. I don't know what they were paying the year before, you know, 5 years ago, or 10 years ago. I don't want to really comment on that. I think that it's you know, it's fair that the stadiums do cough up some money, but that they also need to make money themselves, especially, you know, the likes of the Cheetahs, some of our smaller unions that are cash strapped and don't have game times. They do need to keep some money in-house, keep some money for themselves to pay the player salaries. And maybe, you know, the teams need, the provinces need a bit more money, because we're not as dominant on the world stage when it comes to our domestic teams. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I also don't want to, you know, chastise MultiChoice and SuperSport too much, because they've clearly, they're big sponsors of the Springboks, and the Springboks were able to do a lot with the money that they were given. So if the recipe is a good one, can we complain? Do we have a leg to stand on?
Yeah, I think the difficulty the stadiums are having is because they previously used to pay a percentage of the turnover or the profit that they generated on the day. Now SA Rugby's tried to fix an amount, a minimum amount that they have to receive. But like you said, Ronnie, is this just the world champs tax? You know, the Springboks have done well, they're riding on a high. This is the time for the side to make their money. And that's why tickets are so expensive.
We know SA Rugby's cash strapped themselves. You know, they've clearly said that COVID hammered them hard, and, you know, they're very close to not having to being bankrupt completely. So look, maybe they just need to build their stocks up, and also the arm will not let Biggie fast bait, and the ticket prices need to be high and the unions need to pay a little bit more. And eventually, when SA Rugby is flush with money, hopefully that will come soon, maybe the prices can normalize again.
Yeah, I guess that's true, Ronnie. Then did you see Wales have scheduled a midweek game against the Reds when they go to Australia in July? I think it's quite nice to see the domestic teams getting game time like that, especially in Australia. Wales probably using that as a chance to get even more acclimatized to those conditions ahead of a 2027 World Cup challenge.
No, sure. It's always nice to see a bit of Australian friendly. And for that matter, the Stormers versus Northampton Saints was an interesting match to be played. And yeah, like you said, it's be good for Australia, for their domestic team to get a bit of more match time, albeit through an exhibition match.
Yeah, Ronnie. Then over to Pukka, the Northwest University. They awarded King Rassie Erasmus with a PhD, an honorary PhD. So,
Chitalsery.
Yeah, that was my first reaction. What was it in? But it's actually in coaching. And someone commented on the socials, and it made me laugh so much, that this is Rassie planning for 2027, because doctors are allowed on the field. And now he's a doctor.
It's going to be an extra clarification on the law now. It's a medical doctor.
So I saw
that same comment and I couldn't help but laugh. That was an outstanding. Some people are really shocked.
Then some more players shifting around South Africa. Ronnie Cade Volhoerter has now made his move to the Lions permanent. He was at the Stormers. He was on loan up here in Joburg. He's now permanently signed to join the side. Spoon Corsi, another former Springbok player, he signed for the Cheetahs and he turned out for the first time now in their game against Grik. Was a game they did lose. But yeah, great to see Spoo back on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, I have nothing to say about it. I can't even make it up. Struggling.
Ronnie, then let's just have a bit of a chat about Siya Kolisi. So he underwent minor hand surgery over the weekend. He'll be out for a little bit. Cheslin's also out with a similar situation, but both should be fit in time to link up with the box ahead of the July Irish series. But Rassie today coming out and saying, you know, he prefers his captain to be playing their rugby in South Africa. He's considering appointing a new captain. Obviously, Sia is still eligible for selection and to play, but possibly not going to be the Springbok captain.
So who do you think will be the captain?
Most probably Bongi.
Bongi, right. So yeah, I agree. And it's not a bad thing to do. You know, showing loyalty to South Africa, right? So I don't think that it's a bad thing. I think the one thing, and this is probably this point, something adjacent to this exact point, but I'm interested to see in who he's actually going to select for the Irish tour that comes here. Do we select a whole new team? Do we experiment now? Do we try and defend our title as world champs? You know, a little bit of honor. I don't know so much. I think there's an element of we want to win, sure, but we also need to experiment, because I'm pretty damn sure Rassie said the first gathering of coaches, listen, boys, we're going for the three-peat. So, for that, you know, new captain, new players, you know, the fact that Sia and Cheslin are potentially, you know, injured at the moment, you know, maybe they will be ready for the box, but why play them? Why not just flip the entire script? New captain, new players, new combinations. Let's see how everybody rolls and fits in to the picture.
Well, I mean, Rassie's saying now today that they planned already in 2018 when certain players would be phased out of the system, and those players know that this will be their last year or next year will be their last year. They've already been given roles on how to upskill the youngsters and stuff like that. And that's this kind of level of planning that really makes Rassie such a great coach. So I think we're going to see a strong, familiar team name to take on Ireland. And I think as the year progresses, the reins are going to start getting handed over to the next generation of players in certain positions, obviously. I can't imagine a Springbok team without Sia as the face of it at the moment, though.
Yeah. No, look, but I think Sia, for me, has elevated himself to legendary status. Whether he's captain, whether he's playing, whether he's retired from the game, he's just Sia now. He is forever, will be that legendary captain that took us to two World Cups back to back.
Yeah, and then lastly, the Springboks announcing the signing of Paddy Sullivan to the coaching team. That rounds them out now. He's joining the team as a performance analyst. He was there on a part-time role during the World Cup, and he's also spent 3 years in that role for Montpellier, so familiar with some players like Pollard and Reiner and that have been plying their trade there. So great to see Paddy linking up with the side as well. Ronnie, then shout out Damian Willemse, completes the Cape Town cycle tour. Well done to the man, hey? Not just the rugby player.
Not know that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive to see. But although they spend a lot of time on spinning bikes, I'm sure, so probably cycling is very easy for him.
Also true, also true. Ronnie, lastly, we've got the May Fokchom moment of the week. Now, this one was impressive. It reminded me of those things we all try to do at school on the training grounds, you know, backward pass, behind the back, flings it. So Legeric, the French 9, backhanded pass to Thomas Ramos. Phenomenal, eh?
I wanted to scan, am I allowed to disagree with this moment?
You may.
Firstly, I didn't try this because I was a sensible rugby player. You bloody forwards. I thought you guys could pass behind the back like a bloody idiot. And then I do want to say, like, that was a very risky pass to make. Like, you shouldn't pass like that. The fact that it came off is fantastic. Should you do a pass like that?
Well, if it works, it works, eh, Ronnie? And if you're trying to fill Anton DuPont's shoes, you've got to do something drastic.
Yeah, that. Okay, good point. If you're going to fill DuPont's shoes, you got to call all pockets.
Well, guys, that's it for today's episode.
Thanks for joining for the banter and staying for the chat. My Fokchom, that was luck.
Make sure you smash that like button and subscribe on your preferred listening platform so you won't miss a moment of the madness.
Catch you back here next Wednesday.